My guest at this time is retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis. He has written extensively on issues related to the U.S. military, and just about this time last year, he wrote a column addressing comments by then-presidential candidate Rick Santorum, who at that time said he did not believe women should be serving on the front lines of combat. Colonel McGinnis heartily agreed with that assessment and is joining us now to offer his reaction to the Obama administration announcing that women will, in fact, be allowed to serve in the frontline combat role. And, Colonel, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Greg.
Are you surprised by this decision?
Not at all. In fact, a year ago, when Rick Santorum, he was responding to an announcement by Mr. Panetta, Secretary of Defense, that you know they were going to open 14,000 positions to women and were looking seriously at opening everything. So he was just, you know, responding to that. And in fact, that's what the progressive liberals have been doing for decades. I remember in 1994 when Leon, or Les Aspin, rather, who was Secretary of Defense under Bill Clinton, tried to and went ahead and lifted many of the restrictions for women. And, of course, that resulted in many women serving in combat. And, of course, 130 died so far in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, you know, they see this as part of their movements, part of their agenda. And for a lot of reasons, I think it's wrongheaded.
Colonel, in terms of why you think it's a bad idea, looking at your column from last February, you broke it down into a couple different major categories. First of all, the simple physical differences between men and women. How high are the standards for serving on the front lines, and how difficult do you think it'll be for most women to meet those standards?
Well, frontline combat, if you're hauling a 60, 80-pound pack in the mountains of Afghanistan in severe cold or severe heat, is incredibly grueling. It's the most physically demanding job known to man. Very, very few women could ever even imagine doing some of this. Certainly our own tests in the military have evidenced that. Women only have half the upper body strength of men, which explains why they can't carry heavy burdens all that well. And they also have a quarter less stamina, endurance. So women typically aren't as fast. So that's why we don't see women, you know, running in a marathon against men. That doesn't mean women can't run and that they aren't reasonably fast, but they aren't of the same capability as the average man. And after all, we're dealing with hundreds of thousands of people trying to get the best physically and mentally qualified. Women are, in many cases, very physically capable within their category, but they can't do these tough jobs.
Colonel, you also talk about an issue that is probably stickier given the cultural debate at the time, and that's just simply the complications of having the two genders serving together on the front lines. What are the biggest specific reasons why that would necessarily make our force less prepared or less effective?
Well, first of all male units typically bond, they're cohesive, they fight, if they're well-led, very effectively. As soon as we put men and women together, we tend to polarize the units. There will be some that will get sexual favors and some that won't. It doesn't matter what the leadership is. As we've evidenced over the last decade plus in Afghanistan and Iraq, there's a lot of sex in the ranks. And even the Pentagon's own reports, they say we can't explain why there's been a radical increase in sexual assaults. What does this do to the units? It really polarizes, tears them apart, creates mistrust, and of course it hurts the military family. These are issues that are not easily overcome even in local high schools or in our communities. And of course we don't expect that we're going to put young men and women in close proximity, intimate situations for long periods of time, and that such things don't happen. Moms and dads of America understand this, but apparently the progressives don't.
Colonel, from the military leaders that you're in contact with, how much of this is based on shifting cultural trends or political correctness, and how much of it is that enough women have now served in the ranks where a lot of these people actually believe that the women can function very well at that level on the front lines?
Well, certainly the flag officers are standing up and saluting, and they aren't going to say anything contrary. The fact is that, yes, young women are out there, and they are being hurt, and they are serving. But we're talking about ground combat for the most part, the most difficult physically demanding, and also psychologically demanding. You know, we ought to talk about who in our culture we should hire to do killing. Men, you know, if you look at those crime statistics, men commit all the violent crime in our country, at least 98%, 99%. And we tap that in the military by, you know, kind of redirecting it in a way that we can use effectively. Women, you know, shy away from these sorts of things, but there is a lot of political correctness. There are a lot of people that deny the obvious that most of us see and have for years. And, of course, the political issues of, you know, saying equal effort is equal performance tends to get a lot of support in the civilian ranks, but people that haven't served in the military, especially in a combat role, have no real appreciation. And, of course, the combat environment, you know, as some people argue, has radically changed. Well, that's not true. A counterinsurgency in Iraq is very different than other environments. So we need to be smart about this and not try to paint all military operations, all combat operations, by a narrow experience that we've seen over the last few years.
One of the arguments coming from those in support of this decision is that anyone who can meet the standards, that person should be allowed to serve. And so there's a lot of people who are leery about this decision who are a little bit surprised to see this comment from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, in reaction to the possible changing of standards. Here's what he had to say.
As we look at the requirements for a spectrum of conflict, not just COIN, counterinsurgency, we really need to have standards that apply across all of those. Importantly, though, if we do decide that a particular standard is so high that a woman couldn't make it, the burden is now on the service to come back and explain to the secretary, why is it that high? Does it really have to be that high? With the direct combat exclusion provision in place, we never had to have that conversation.
What do you make of that comment?
Well, he's going to really change the standards, as I suspect. We did it at West Point, so women don't have to do the push-ups and the pull-ups like the men. And the men had to do fewer. What good is that to our armed forces that depends upon men to do the fighting? Same thing in submarines, the same thing in special forces. You know, all of these jobs have been gender normed. And when you gender norm something so that you can satisfy the weakest of the two, you end up with a weaker military. Then, of course, that whole notion that General Dempsey talks about ignores the psychological issues that I mentioned earlier, and also it fails to recognize the polarization, the sexual dynamics that go on amongst young people. Yeah, these are serious issues. We should not be trifling with the national security. This is not about jobs. This is about a political agenda pushed by feminists so that they can break the glass ceiling. They think that the military is the last bastion in which that exists. But unfortunately, we all depend upon our armed forces. And the consequences of this, moms and dads of America need to understand, the consequence is that their daughters will be registering for the draft just like their 18-year-old sons in the future. The only thing that prohibits it is the policy that Mr. Panetta wants to remove. And then they will not only sign up for Selective Service, but as inevitably this volunteer force is going to fail because we're not going to afford to pay people the way we are here today and have recently, then they're going to be drafted. And moms and dads of America, yes, your daughters will go. And that's something that our political leaders today have made a decision.
Colonel, last question. About October of 2011 is when the change happened at the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And at that time, you expressed to us your disappointment in the performance of Admiral Mullen in that role, especially as it related to cultural issues, his advocacy of lifting Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and so forth. And at the time, you spoke very, very highly of General Dempsey. Since that time, he's come under fire to some extent for this policy. He's also been reportedly cracking down on instructors on a radical Islam course after a CARE reacted to that negatively, even though the course had been approved. There's been some other things out there as well, and rules of engagement and so forth that haven't been changed, and people feel are handcuffing our soldiers. Those are the concerns. What do you make of his leadership at this point?
You know, I've known Marty Dempsey for 40 years. Unfortunately, general officers tend to change, and in his case, he's changed in a way that is unfavorable in my viewpoint. Certainly, the issues that you mentioned are distressing, wrong-headed, not in the best interest of the military, much less the country. But we have to keep in mind who appointed him. He was appointed by Barack Obama. And Mr. Obama would not have appointed him unless he thought he was going to carry out exactly what he wanted. Mr. Obama makes a no secret about some of the general officers that he's fired in the past that didn't agree with him politically. It seems to me that if the chairman of the Joint Chiefs is doing the political bidding of the president, then clearly he was vetted beforehand in that regard. And so I would say this is a compromise of principles if, in fact, Marty did hold those principles years ago.
Colonel, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you, sir, as always, very much for being with us.
Thanks, Greg.
Retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis, he wrote on the issue of women serving in the front lines of combat in February of 2012. You can find that online. I believe that was for Human Events. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.